You get a call from your child's teacher. Your child has been talking out in class. Your child has had conversations in class, and your child is to receive punishment work. The teacher would like you to correct the behavior as the teacher finds it disruptive to what's happening in the classroom. If this behavior continues, there will be greater consequences. Somewhat annoyed at being admonished by your child's teacher, you ask your child when the child returns home for an explanation. She explains that indeed she had been talking to the child next to her. That child is mainstreamed with considerable learning difficulties, but trying to cope in class. It happens that your child has the opportunity, the privilege to sit next to this child and has taken a protective interest in her. On the day in question, the other child was confused about what the assignment was, what the class was doing. Seeing the confusion on the girl's face, your daughter leaned over to help out for just a second and was reprimanded for speaking in class. What do you do? My first inclination, personally, before the explanation for the child, would have been to be annoyed and to reprimand the child. After all, how can you go against the classroom instructions and be so disrespectful to the teacher? Having heard the explanation, I would tell the same child that the world is sometimes not a just place. Things don't always go the way we want them to go. Things are not always fair. And you'll have to do the extra work that you've were assigned. The teacher is in charge in the classroom, and you're going to have to do what the teacher says. But I would then say, you know, I'm proud for what you've done. Having heard what was actually going on, I'll stand in your corner and help you out. I'd be proud to know that a child had done such a good thing, even in the face of being reprimanded. This week's Torah portion, as we just heard, says, "You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy." Now, that's what it tells us. That's what it says. The rest is just commentary in case you can't figure out what it means to be holy. And we have a lot of trouble with that. I have often defined for people that holiness, in my understanding, is to be in touch with that which leads to God, to be in touch, to do that which places you in touch with God. So Torah is called holy among the Jewish people because indeed we say that when you're in touch with Torah, you are more in touch with God. And Jerusalem is a holy city because in Jerusalem, you're in a holier place and it's easier to be in touch with God. But I have another definition of holy as well. I have long believed that holy is that which brings us together, as opposed to that which separates between human beings. Probably most of you don't know that technically, in terms of my own theology, I'm a mystic. Now, that's a technical category. I don't spend a whole lot of time meditating. But what that means is that I believe that the world is disparate pieces that were separated in creation, and that the intention of the world is to cohere. That all of us are disparate parts, and those trees and all objects were just disparate pieces of creation, and all of creation is meant to be brought back together into a coherent whole. So I fervently believe that evil is that which separates us, and good is that which brings us together, and therefore holy is that which causes us to cohere, which ends the separations between us. War separates us. Love brings us together. Anger separates us. Compassion brings us together. Ambition separates us. Mutuality brings us together. My idea of the structure of the world, what God requires of us, is to harmonize the world and its creatures. Another way to put it, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. As God is one, as we say in the Shema, Adonai Echad, and as tradition teaches us, we recite the Shema, Liyached et Shemo, to unify God's name. What does it mean? It means to make the world cohere, for all of the world is God's name. I think this week's Torah portion commands us that we participate in restoring the wholeness of our world, step by step, moment by moment. You know, the Torah, it just doesn't stop with generalities. It tells us ways to make the world holy. So after it says, "You shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy," it says, "Revere your mother and your father." As earlier in Exodus it said, "Honor your father and your mother," here it says, "Revere your mother and your father." "Do not put a stumbling block before the blind. Do not be a talebearer among your people. Do not stand idly by the blood of your neighbor." All of these things are ways that the world can be torn apart or put back together. Each of these removes the barriers between human beings or intensifies those barriers. Each of these has the possibility for harmonizing our interests, bringing us together rather than separating us. And the first of the commandments is Shabbat. "A person shall revere his mother and his father. You shall keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord." By tradition, Shabbat is called Me'ein Olam Haba. Me'ein Olam Haba means a taste of the world to come. You know, all of us, I suspect, would like to live forever if we could live in good health. None of us really wants to end our sojourn in this life. Our tradition says that there is another life. And so you say, well, how do I know? You know, how? And what's it like? And so tradition answers that question, that Shabbat is Me'ein Olam Haba. It's a taste, just a taste, of what awaits us in the world to come. I envision Olam Haba as being a palace in time, as Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel might have put it. But clearly such a Shabbat does not just happen. The world is not a harmonious place just because we wish it to be. Such a place has to be built. What might Shabbat look like? First and foremost, it must be a palace of peace. Now you all know there's a mitzvah, I suspect you all know there's a mitzvah called Shalom Bayit, right? Shalom Bayit is peace in the house. For the sake of Shalom Bayit, many things can be done. So for instance, you can say of a meal that was burnt to a crisp, "Best meal I ever had." You could say about somebody who says, "Have I done a good job here?" "Absolutely, you've done a great job." A man who perhaps is not as successful in life as he might have been can be told by his family, "You're terrific." Because Shalom Bayit is the place where we have peace, contentment of the soul. I discovered an interesting fact recently in a book by Paul Ekman, the great psychologist who studies facial expressions. He was writing about moods and emotions. He writes that emotions last for short periods of time and moods last for longer times. Anybody here been in a mood? We have an honest child. Thank you very much. You've been in a mood. Did the mood come and go and just like that, or did it last a little while? It lasts a little while, don't they? Yeah, the rest of us have moods too. We just don't like to admit to them. Emotions come and go. Moods last. But it's true of both emotions and moods that they screen out the other things that are happening. When you feel overwhelming love, anybody here ever been in overwhelming love? I hope so. When you are in overwhelming love, it's difficult to feel anything else. You ever wonder why in a bad situation, people in love are just happy? It's raining outside, it's cold, it's miserable, but the person at the next desk is in love, and it's the most beautiful day God ever made. It's so annoying. Nothing but love can occupy their mood. When you feel great sadness, it's the same thing. If you're in a sad mood, good things can be happening around you, but you're sad, and you screen them out. Ekman writes that we screen out all other emotions, at least temporarily, when we have a strong emotion or we're in a mood. Moods screen out even the good things. Suppose we assume the Shabbat mood. Suppose on Shabbat we said, Shalom Bayit is my mood. Everything today is going to be peaceful. Wouldn't that be a good thing? I mean, wouldn't it be great that just one day, 1/7 of our time, all of life became harmony? What would that feel like? I'm suggesting that everything that does not contribute to harmony be screened out on Shabbat. So to go back to the opening story, the story of the child, the parent, and the teacher. The teacher was trying to incite a confrontation. She called the parent, expecting that the parent would confront the child and say, you've been wrong. You must conform to what the teacher says, and you're going to be punished. But when the parent assumed an understanding attitude, the child changed the direction entirely. Now the parent and child were on the same page. Instead of opposing one another, as the teacher had intended, the child and the parent had a value in common, the welfare of the child. Isn't that a clue to what Shabbat is supposed to be about? We ought to screen out any emotions that lead us to oppose the people whom we love. Two techniques for Shabbat Shalom Bayit immediately suggest themselves. The first is what the parent did in the story. She found that both parent and child embraced the same values. Sure, she went into it thinking, my child's been wrong. That was the call from the teacher. But then exploring, both parent and child found out that what they really were about was caring about another human being, and that that was preeminent. Harmony, harmony, harmony. Doing a little probing brought the world together. You're all familiar with the biblical story of Joseph. We tell it every year. The brothers show up. Can you imagine what it was like to be Joseph? I mean, 20 years since he'd been sold into slavery. How many times did he think about vengeance? How many times did he think about getting back to his brothers who had thrown him in a pit and sold him into slavery? He had been sent to Pharaoh's prison. He probably had been spat upon. The Torah tells us that when he was brought out of the pit to speak to Pharaoh, what they have to do? Give him a shave, cut his hair, clean him up. He was left for nothing for almost 20 years. And now his brothers are standing in front of him. He could have had his way. He could have been confrontational. He could have said to them, I am Joseph, your brother, and you will pay. Instead, he probed their intention. He took his internal conflicts, all that must have been roiling inside of him, and he said, I'm going to set that aside. I'm going to find out if my brothers are good people or bad. Instead of indulging his emotions, a very human thing to do but wrong, he sought harmony. He set up a test to find out if they would abandon his brother Benjamin as he himself had been abandoned. He wanted to see if the hostility within his brothers remained. Judah, he found, was willing to sacrifice himself for Benjamin. He had repented. He wasn't the man he had once been. They were remorseful about what they had done to their father, what they had done to Joseph. Where family feud may have prevailed, harmony and compassion reigned instead. Joseph set aside what he felt in favor of creating harmony between himself and his brothers. Joseph found that he and his brothers did indeed have the same values, even if they had acted out of anger 20 years earlier. So they'd been annoyed at him and they sold him into slavery. His seething was perhaps replaced by love, but I think more likely he just set it aside. Joseph found that his own emotions did not matter in this situation. It was God's plan that mattered. As he later said to his brothers, you meant it for evil. God meant it for good. Joseph recognized that his brothers were just frankly, angry that Joseph was the favorite. And Joseph, I believe, also recognized within himself that vengeance would get him nothing, and harmony would get him everything. Who can know what the greater reason was for Joseph setting aside his anger? If Joseph was enraged, he kept it to himself. He created peace in the family. Our people went down to Egypt, and the rest is history. One way to handle a confrontation is to search for the common value between you and the other and build not upon the disagreement, but the commonality that you find. It can work in every single instance if we can set aside the emotion or the mood and go with building peace. That is what it means to be holy. Another way to set aside that mood is just to say, you know what, it's Shabbat. Nothing disharmonious is going to enter into my life for the next 24 hours. A lady said to me when her father died, want to know what he did? She said, anytime we went to him with something negative, if mom would tell him something that we'd done, he waited overnight until he said anything. She said, we expected him to get angry. He didn't. It made us crazy. What will Dad say tomorrow? It was like counting to 10, only more so. You see, the father had the good thought that he could set aside whatever the emotion of the moment was for the greater wisdom of the next day. Anger tears apart. Compassion brings together. The man waited to allow his compassion to overcome his anger. Precisely what we say God does when God steps on Rosh Hashanah from the throne of judgment onto the throne of mercy. Shabbat is a taste of the world to come. In the world to come, everyone will live in harmony all the time. That's the way it should be here. But I don't suppose that will happen. So just suppose that we can have one day that really is an island in time, when no disagreements occur, when we search for what we have in common with the other and therefore build upon that commonality and bring ourselves together, or if we can't find it, we just set it aside for the next day. Members of a family can constantly be at war with one another. I know we have all seen families where every single thought, every single statement seems to be an argument, either in tone or in action. But the opposite can also be true. For children to live healthy lives, they must have more love than disharmony, more caring than opposition. Achieving that without abandoning our values requires a Shabbat. May we all create a time when disagreements are set aside, when we build upon the common factors, the common ideals, the common values that we find between ourselves and those with whom we share our lives. May we create on Shabbat that loving mood that all of us seek in our lives every day. May Shabbat, in fact, be, me'ein olam haba, a taste of the world to come.